Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, Text 39. Dehi panchatvamapane. Dehi panchatvamapane. Dehi karmanu. Dehi karmanugo vasa. Dehi karmanugo vasa. Dehantaram anuprapya. Dehantaram anuprapya. Praktanam tyajate vapu. Praktanam tyajate vapu. Dehi panchatvamapane. Dehi karmanu. Dehi karmanugo vasa. Dehantaram anuprapya. Praktanam tyajate vapu. Others. Vaishnavis. Dehi, when the body, panchatvam apane, turns into five elements. Dehi, the proprietor of the body, the living being, karma anuga, following the reactions of his own fruitive activities, avasa, spontaneously, automatically, Deya Antaram, another body made of material elements. Anuprapya, receiving as a result. Praktanam, the former. Tyajate, gives up. Vapu, body. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. When the present body turns to dust and is again reduced to five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, the proprietor of the body, the living being, automatically receives another body of material elements according to his fruitive activities. When the next body is obtained, he gives up the present body. Purport. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, which presents the beginning of spiritual understanding. Dehinosmin yata dehe komanam yovanam jada tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namuyate. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 13. A person or an animal is not the material body. Rather, the material body is the covering of the living being. Bhagavad Gita compares the body to a dress and elaborately explains how one changes dresses one after another. The same Vedic knowledge is confirmed here. The living being, the soul, is constantly changing bodies one after another. Even in the present life, the body changes from childhood to boyhood, from boyhood to youth, from youth to old age. Similarly, when the body is too old to continue, the living being gives up this body and, by the laws of nature, automatically gets another body according to his fruitive activities, desires, and ambitions. The laws of nature control this sequence, and therefore, as long as the living entity is under the control of the external material energy, the process of bodily change takes place automatically, according to one's fruitive activities. Vasudeva therefore wanted to impress upon Kamsa that if he committed this sinful act of killing a woman, in his next life he would certainly get a material body still more conditioned to the sufferings of material existence. Thus, Vasudeva advised Kamsa not to commit sinful activities. One who commits sinful activities because of ignorance, tamagun, obtains a lower body. Karanam gunasangosya sadasadyona janmeshu. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 22. There are hundreds and thousands of different species of life. Why are there higher and lower bodies? One receives these bodies according to the contaminations of material nature. If in this life one is contaminated by the mode of ignorance and sinful activities, duskriti, in the next life by the laws of nature, one will certainly get a body full of suffering. The laws of nature are not subservient to the whimsical desires of the conditioned soul. Our endeavor, therefore, should be to associate always with sattva-gun and not indulge in rajagun or tamagun, rajas-tamo-bhava. Lusty desires and greed keep the living entity perpetually in ignorance and prevent him from being elevated to the platform of sattva-gun or shuddha-sattva-gun. One is advised to be situated in shuddha-sattva-gun, devotional service, for thus one is immune to the reactions of the three modes of material nature. Om aginate manam dasya jananjana shalakaya chakshurna militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri chaitanya mano vishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa gadamayam dadati swapadantikam. So, this is Vasudeva speaking to Kamsa. And let's see, the translation, is when the present body turns to dust and is again reduced to five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, the proprietor of the body, the living being, automatically receives another body of material elements according to his fruitive activities. When the next body is obtained, he gives up the present body. So that last sentence sounds a little, when I read it, I just felt, what is it? When the next body is obtained, he gives up the present body. It would seem that he would give up the present body before he even obtains the next body. And when the next body is obtained, he gives up the present body. I don't know if it's very important, but one way I was understanding that when I read that sentence, maybe it's not, I don't know. But anyway, one possible explanation for that is that just like, say, somebody's in prison, and they're in a particular jail and a particular cell, okay? So they stay in that cell, in that jail, but and the prison authorities decide, okay, he's going to be transferred to this jail, and he's going to be in this cell. So when that's decided, then he's transferred from the cell he's in and the jail he's in, and he's transferred to the new jail and put in the new cell. So in that sense, first he's when the next body is obtained. So in other words, it's already decided. Just like Prabhupada gave the example, I've heard this said that if somebody's in a coma, they ask Prabhupada about that. And Prabhupada said that's because the person is very, very sinful, and they're just, Yamaraj is still working out what's the next, you know, hasn't been decided yet what the next destination is for that person. But once it's decided, then, you know, then the soul leaves, gives up that body, gives up the present body, and then obtains the next body. So it could be understood in that way. Not that it's a very important point. But in general, so here we are in the 10th canto. The chapter is called The Event of Lord Krishna Introduction. And, you know, hearing that, okay, now finally we're going to be hearing about the pastimes of Krishna. This is the 10th canto. And, you know, here we go. The night, the good stuff. And it is, of course. But so what's, we're hearing about not the body. You know, we're hearing here in the 10th canto here about the basic philosophy. I mean, of course, it's Kamsa. I mean, Vasudeva has to preach at the Kamsa, so it's, you know, there's a reason for that. But even in the purport, Prabhupada elaborates upon it. So, you know, how is it that here we, way on into the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, we're still hearing about, you know, how we're still hearing about the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 2.13 here, and he refers to another verse, Bhagavad Gita 2.22, Vasam Sijanani Yata Vahaya, Navani Granati Naroparani, Tata Shirirani Vahaya Janani, Anyani Samyati Navani Dehi. Just as a person gives up old and useless clothing, you know, and accepts new ones, in the same way the soul gives up the old bodies and gets a new one. So he's referring to that in the purport. He doesn't mention the verse number or anything, but he, you know, talks about Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita compares the body to a dress and elaborately explains how one changes dresses one after another. So how is that? Here we are, 10th canto, and this is what's, you know, the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is what's being elaborated upon in the purport. Well, the reason for that is because, unfortunately, it's not something that's very well understood. You know, it's not well understood, what to speak of, by the non-devotees who don't understand it at all. You know, they don't have a clue, basically. But even devotees, even among devotees, it's really something that's perhaps not as well, let's put it this way, not as well understood as what it should be. And possibly, Prabhupada, when, you know, formulating his purports here, was aware of that, and therefore, even into the 10th canto, which he was probably working on way in, you know, into 1976, or at least 1976, perhaps 1977, he was still emphasizing these basic points of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, not the body. So it's a really, it's something that, you know, as devotees, we have to really work on and make sure we work on understanding this point. Here in the last paragraph of the purport, Prabhupada says, the laws of nature are not subservient to the whimsical desire of the conditioned soul. Our endeavor therefore should be to associate always with sattva-gun and not indulge in rajagun or tamagun. Lusty desires and greed keep the living entity perpetually in ignorance and prevent him from being elevated to the platform of sattva-gun or shuddha-sattva-gun. One is advised to be situated in shuddha-sattva-gun, devotional service, for thus one is immune to the reactions of the three modes of material nature. See? So here's Prabhupada, you know, perhaps, let's say, for argument's sake, 1976, in a purport to a 10th canto verse, you know, emphasizing this point that one has to be engaged, situated in shuddha-sattva guna devotional service in order to be immune to the reactions of the three modes of material nature. So why does he have to say that? Because it was necessary. Because even in 1976, leading disciples, not just, you know, the little guys, but even some, you know, big so-called big devotees, where he probably could see were struggling and having difficulties and, you know, not being able to maintain the proper standard. So Prabhupada's emphasizing these points. So for us, the way we should, I think, take this is that we should understand that in order for us to understand this, we have to, you know, we have to be very serious about exactly what Prabhupada's saying here, being situated in devotional service, shuddha-sattva guna. If somebody's thinking, if a devotee's thinking that I'm going to be okay, you know, I'm going to not be affected by rajas, tamas, bhav, I'll be nicely in the Krishna conscious movement, but without being serious, good luck. Good luck. That has not been my experience in my own, or my observation. Two things. It's not been my experience that you can be, you know, properly situated in devotional service if you're not serious about, one, sadhana, okay? That means showing up here in the morning, starting Mangal Arati, chanting 16 real rounds. Okay, if you don't do it here in the temple room, okay, fair enough, that's okay. But you got to chant 16 real rounds. Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble. So showing up again for greeting the deities, being here for the Bhagavatam class, you know, this is Prabhupada's, you know, gave us this program, and there's a reason for it. He knew exactly what he was doing. So, yeah, so as I said, three things. The sadhana, then you have to have service. It's not just enough to come to the program and then you go and chill out all day or sleep or whatever. You got to really engage in service. And then, with those two things, you got to be following the four regulative principles. You got to be doing all those things while simultaneously, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. And if you're doing that, those three, if you have a good sadhana and a good service and you're following the regulative principles, then you got a shot at it. You know, then you're going to be, most likely you'll be okay then. You'll be able to stay nicely, firmly situated in the Krishna conscious movement. But if you're slack on one of those three things, good luck. Really, good luck. As I said, it has not been my experience or my observation that anybody who's not serious about those three things, good sadhana, good solid service attitude and performance, and following the regulative principles, has been able to make it in good standing in the Krishna conscious movement. I don't think it happens. You're living in a dream. Right? And Savas is smiling like anything, which means I know he agrees with me. That's our temple president, and he's agreeing like anything, and he's Archita's kind of smiling. Savas is smiling. So, yeah, this is, you know, this is not just kind of some thing I'm just saying out of left field or something like that. This is the, what, you know, your devotees who've been around, who are in positions of responsibility. This is like the proper understanding.
Okay.
And Prabhupada, and it's this philosophy to back this up. This isn't just some fanatic sentiment. The philosophy appears right in the Bhagavad Gita. And because Prabhupada's making this point here that the laws of nature are not subservient to the whimsical desires. Oh, yeah, one receives bodies according to the contaminations of material nature. In this life, one is contaminated by the mode of ignorance and sinful activities, if one is contaminated like that. In the next life, the laws of nature will certainly get a body full of suffering. So the point is this, and this is why Prabhupada's emphasizing that you have to be situated in shuddha-sattva guna, devotional service, is because in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, see, once again, it's not just like be a good boy, you know. No, this is like science. This is the point. This is science. And the science is presented in Bhagavad Gita. In the third chapter, Krishna says, Jagyartat kamano nyatra loko yam kamabandana. Help me out. Tadartam kamakunte mukta sangha samachara. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to the material nature. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction, and in this way remain unattached and free from bondage. So the point is that unless you're doing work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, that it binds you. See? That's your protection. If you're engaged in devotional service, if you're performing work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, then you're protected. But if you don't, then Maya, you're just wide open for Maya to work you over. And she will. You see? And it's like people who are not engaged in devotional service, they might think, well, I'm not going to be engaged in devotional service, but I'm not going to be sinful. I'm just going to be a nice person, and I'll be kind of like a nice spiritual mode of goodness kind of person, even if they don't know that word. I'll be nice, and I'll be okay. No, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. If you're not engaged in devotional service, if you're not work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, then you are going to be entangled, and you're going to be getting reactions to sinful activities, even if you're not doing those things intentionally. There's someplace in lectures, I can't remember the Sanskrit, Panchasuno. Prabhupada says there's five types of sinful activities that everybody engages in, whether they like it or not, whether they know it or not. You know, when you light a fire, you're killing living entities. When you walk on the ground, you're probably stepping on all sorts of insects. When you grind spices, you're killing like that. When you boil water, right, there's five of them. Oh, when you breathe, that's why the Jains walk around with a mask. You see, so in other words, there's no way you cannot engage in sinful activity while you're here in this material world. So the only way you can protect yourself against that is by work done as a sacrifice of Vishnu has to be performed. So if you're acting on the direction of a higher authority, then you're not responsible for the reaction of your activity. Prabhupada would give the example of the soldier who's told to go, you know, and fight in the war, and he kills 1,000 enemies. But because he's killing 1,000 enemies on the instruction of the higher authority, when he comes back home after the war, he's not considered a criminal for killing 1,000 people. He's might be a hero. He's considered a hero. You see, so why? Because he's acting on the direction of higher authority. So if we're acting on the direction of higher authority, Krishna, you know, and engaging in devotional service, then we're not going to be held accountable for the, you know, reactions to the sinful activities that we inevitably will perform, just because that's what happens when you're just, you know, alive here in the material world. So anyway, so that's a very important point, that devotees, we have to be very serious about this. You know, what Prabhupada's pointing out here, if we want to have a hope of understanding that we're remaining free from these reactions that Prabhupada's talking about, and understanding that we're not the body. As far as the non-devotees go, you know, the rest of the world, yeah, for them, they're in a different situation altogether. It's like, really, as I said, they don't have a clue what's going on. They really don't have a clue what's happening. That's kind of understandable because, you know, Prabhupada explains in various places that we're in the Kali Yuga now. And as Kali Yuga progresses, things get worse. Right? Everybody has that understanding, right? You know, as we've heard that Kali Yuga is 432,000 years long. We're 5,000 years into it. That means there's 420,000 years left, 427,000 years left. And we've heard Prabhupada in many lectures say that as times go on, it's going to get worse. They won't be this, they won't be that. You know, people will be eating each other eventually, and et cetera. You know, so many, we've heard Prabhupada make so many different comments, statements about how things will deteriorate, be worse as the Kali Yuga progresses. So if we accept that as a principle, in the sense that as the ages progress, things degrade, okay? It's not just that in Kali Yuga, as Kali Yuga progresses, it degrades, but even in the Satya Yuga, as Satya Yuga progressed, things degraded. As Dwapara Yuga progressed, things degraded. As Treta Yuga progresses, things degraded. See? So basically what that means is we're 4 million years into the degradation. You see? Because Sahasra Yuga Paryantam, Lord Brahma's day is 4.3 billion years. His night is also 4.3 billion years. And his day consists of 1,000 cycles of the four millenniums, and each cycle is 4.3 million years. 4.3 million times 1,000 is 4.3 billion, you see? So every cycle of four yugas is 4.3 billion years, And we are just more or less at the beginning of the Kali Yuga. We've got 425,000 years left, which means we're basically 4 million years into this cycle. Say that again. Okay, I'll get to that. Since you brought it up, I'll address that. So we're basically, and thank you for bringing that. It's a good point. So we're basically 4 million years into it. It's been going downhill since the beginning of the Satya Yuga. Okay? And we got a lot of momentum here, you see? So basically it means a lot of momentum, a lot of ignorance. It's just getting more and more and more ignorant. Just like, you know, in the end of the day when the sun sets. The sun sets and it just gets darker and darker and darker and darker. Okay, so it's pretty, you know, for them it's a pretty bleak picture. It's a pretty bleak picture because, after all, human life is meant for understanding about spiritual life. Brahma Sutra says, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. You know, that's the first aphorism. I think it's the first or the second aphorism in the Brahma Vedanta Sutra. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now is the time. Human life. You've come to the human life. Now is the time to inquire about Brahman. You see? Or Sanatana Goswami said to Lord Chaitanya, Kami, who am I? So basically what was being asked there, what's the thing that's being addressed there in both those questions or both those statements is, well, what's going on here? Am I essentially matter or am I essentially spirit? See, and actually, this is what meditation is. You know, these days meditation is a real buzzword. It's a real buzzword. We're getting a lot of mileage out of that word, meditation. When we, do the distribute books, we're going out. We have a table now, you know, as everybody's probably heard. We have the sign that says free meditation books. And people are very attracted to both, two of those three words, particularly the free. They like that. And the meditation. Meditation is really... it's in now, you see. But most people, their idea of meditation is, you know, mindfulness, which means I don't even know what really exactly what they're doing when they think they're meditating. They just kind of sit and try to relax and pay attention to their breath or clear their mind. I mean, I don't know what that even means, you know, because I don't think it. I mean, how do you clear your mind? It's always. But in any event, it's just all hocus. It's just, they don't have a clue. But what actually meditation is just what we're talking about right now. This is meditation. Meditation is trying to understand, using every bit of your intelligence, every bit of whatever you got going for yourself, you know, to try to understand, well, am I essentially matter or am I essentially spirit? That's what meditation is. That's what now is the time to, inquire about Brahman. It means asking that, trying to understand, Kami, you know, who am I? Am I matter or am I spirit? You see? But unfortunately, people aren't even aware that that's what they're supposed to be doing. What to speak of that they're doing it, they don't have a clue. But thanks to this nice bhakta over here, he's helped me in my class. He made the point. He said, what about the 10,000 years, the golden age of Lord Chaitanya? Exactly. And that's where the hope is. And that's where we come into the picture. We are Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, you see? So we're supposed to go out there and represent Lord Chaitanya to the general mass of people and give them the opportunity to take advantage of their human form of life. This is the chance. You know, it's called a window of opportunity, you see? That, because otherwise they're just totally, it's so ignorant out there. It's unbelievable how ignorant it is. It's beyond the scope of this class to kind of start talking about how ignorant it is out there. But this is the opportunity, you know, that they can come in contact with Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement by, you know, getting a book, getting prasadam, hearing the chanting, like, or all three, and, you know, get into it. You know, get some contact or get some understanding. So that's where we come. And people are ripe. People are ripe for whatever reason. I mean, lately we've been distributing books up at the observatory, and unlike college campuses, where it's just, you know, 95% kids between the ages of 18 and, say, 24, this is up at the observatory, we're getting people from all over the world. Probably in a week's time, we must be meeting people from 100 different countries. And they're people from the ages of kids, you know, 4 or 5 and, you know, like that, just old enough to walk. Or actually, everything. I mean, there's from the youngest to the oldest, from the richest to the poorest, to the most educated to the most ignorant, every part of the world, that's who you meet at the observatory. It's like a total international cosmopolitan spot. And, you know, not everybody, but people from all different walks of life, all different situations are attracted, you see? So we have a great opportunity, you know, to do something, to do what we're supposed to be doing, which is Yade Deke Tade Kara Krishna Upadesh, Amara Agnaya Guru Ana Guru Hanatana Adesh. That wherever you go, whoever you meet, you know, tell them about Krishna. Hopefully we're going to hear some good report from the traveling party. We asked them to try rest areas, which used to be very successful back in the 70s, I believe, in Florida. And we're hoping that we're going to be able to, you know, find some more good spots to meet people from all different walks of life and have them, you know, help them get some engagement or contact with Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. So, so once again, getting back to the basic point, this is like very important stuff. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's so important. It's not that this is not Prabhupada's trip that, you know, he's really thinking he's got to emphasize. No, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna thought this particular point is so important that, you know, we're not the body, that in the second chapter, he repeats it for 20 texts. He repeats the point for 20 texts. Can you think of any other point in the Bhagavad Gita or any other literature that is repeated for 20 times in a row? It doesn't exist. From 2:11, how's that go? Asochanam vasochas tvam bhagyavadams kabashyase gatasum agatasum cha nanu sochanti panditaha. That's 2:11. While speaking learned words, you're mourning for that which is not worthy of grief. The wise lament leader for the living or the dead. That's the first one. To 2:29, Dehi Nicho Abhajoyam Dehi Sarva Shabharata Tasmat Sarvani Bhutani Natvam Sochitam Arhasi. That know that he who dwells in the body is eternal and can never be slain, therefore you should not grieve for any creature. So there's 20 verses there that Krishna is basically says the same thing. Boom, 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 boom. And just slightly different, you know, different words coming in. It's like, you know, boom. It's a very important point. It's a very important point. And that's why it's emphasized so much by Krishna in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And then that's not only there. It's other places in the Bhagavad Gita, at the end of the 13th chapter, at the end of the 14th chapter. There's different places throughout the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna throws it in there again. So it's a super important point. And what time is it? Okay. Yeah, so just on the whole here, so we're actually in a really good position, at least this is how I think, how I feel, because, okay, we have this knowledge, we've been given this knowledge, we're, you know, engaged in devotional service, and, you know, somebody might feel like, okay, well, you know, but it's all dogmatic. It's kind of, you know, it's in your scripture, you guys say it's like that, but, you know, where's the proof, where's the evidence? It's just like we got to accept it because your book says so. Well, no, not like that. There actually is evidence. If you want to bother to look for it, there's evidence. There's evidence that supports this at least this point. I actually found it was, to be honest with you, I was kind of excited and happy when I saw this was my verse because what I do when I want to just relax is I watch a video about kids who remember their past lives or something like that. That's my Maya, if you call it Maya. But I don't call it Maya because it helps me become more convinced about Krishna consciousness. And there's evidence. There's evidence from very conservative people who are scientifically trained. I don't know if you want to call them scientists or not, but they're certainly performing like that. That consciousness is irreducible. Consciousness goes on from one body to the other. It's been studied now for over 50 years in a scientific, systematic way these people are doing the research, at least on one category of it, is children remember their past lives. They have over 2,500 cases on, you know, written up and on file of this phenomena. And these guys who are not Buddhists, they're not Hindus, they're not religious guys, but they think the best explanation for this is that, yeah, these kids are remembering their past lives, you know. Aside from that, there's near-death, out-of-body experiences. So, in other words, there's evidence to support this idea that we're something more than just this material body. It's not just that people have to just accept it on faith, which is something people really don't like doing these days, especially religious faith. It's not popular. You know, you tell somebody, well, you should accept the Bhagavad Gita on faith. Have some faith. Thanks, but, you know, I'm right. I'm good. They don't want to do that, you see. But it's not just faith. You don't have to just accept it on faith. There's evidence to support this worldview. Now, that doesn't prove this worldview, okay? It doesn't, you know, just because there's evidence to support that we're not the body, that reincarnation is something that happens, that doesn't prove that Krishna consciousness is right. But it certainly keeps it in the running as a candidate for being absolutely correct. Whereas some of these other worldviews, such as the mechanistic reductionist scientific worldview, which says that when you're born, that's the beginning, and when you die, that's the end. Well, if this evidence is correct, then that's eliminated, right? And also Christianity, which says it's appointed for man to die once and then the judgment, which, by the way, is if you ever get hit by that when you're out on Sankirtan, you should understand that that person is quoting out of context. That verse is from Hebrews 9:27, and it's actually a sentence or phrase that appears in an argument, and whoever the author of that particular book of the Bible is, Hebrews, they're making the point that just as a person dies once and then gets judged, so in the same way Jesus Christ came, he got killed, he sacrificed his life on the cross, and those who accept him, you know, accept that he made that sacrifice, they get atonement for all their sins. They don't have to perform, you know, regular sacrifices every year like that, which is what the tradition was back in those days. So, in other words, they're quoting out of context. It's not talking about reincarnation or you know, in that part of the Bible. It's talking about something different, but they quote it and they use it in that way. So, anyway, my point is that, you know, we're in a good position. We're in a good position. You know, our philosophy is, when we sincerely and seriously practice it, Pratyakshavagamam damyam sushukam kartamavyam. You get direct perception of the self by realization, you know. And aside from that, there's empiric evidence to support it. You know, we don't have to, even if you're not on your top of your game, but for some stretch in time, there's always, you can fall back on there's evidence that supports the things that we believe in. So, and also, it doesn't just, okay, let's go back. Let's try this. Okay, so say these guys are going, there's evidence that consciousness is irreducible, that it seems like it's a soul that is going from one body to the other. Okay, great. Thank you. What's the rest of the story? Okay, and that's my response to these, with all due respect, you know, to these people who are doing this research. I don't have to mention their names. Okay, I agree with you. I agree with your conclusion that, yeah, it's the best explanation for these cases is that these kids are actually, this reincarnation is something that's happening. Whoopee. Okay, what's the rest of the story? See, at that point, they just kind of go, well, I'll just speculate. I mean, and they could say, well, your guess is as good as mine. But we do have a rest of the story. That's the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness, you see? That's why I get excited about this stuff, because, you know, it supports what I've been taught for the last 43 years, which nobody else was teaching. Nobody else would dare talk about this stuff except for Prabhupada, you know? Because you'd be considered crazy back in the 1970s to be talking about how we're not the body, we're souls. That was not in. That was not in vogue. That was not like the popular thing. Prabhupada was very bold and courageous to preach like that. Now you could preach like that and everybody would go, yeah, sure, spirit, soul, like that. You know, it's in again, you know. It's kind of fashionable to talk about spirit. Not back in those days, no way. So Prabhupada just kind of like, in an atmosphere of total unacceptance, You know, total. Prabhupada just boldly just came out and said, "We're not the body." And you know, in a time when humans, at least in America, people were totally into materialism and being the body. It wasn't popular. It wasn't popular. Prabhupada wasn't presenting something that was popular. So anyway, so that was there. And so we have the rest of the story. Yajgyatva napunar mohan evam yas yasi pandava yena bhutani yasheshani draksyas yatmani atomai. Krishna says, so when you have learned the truth from a bona fide spiritual master, you will know that all living beings are part of me, they're in me, they're mine. See, that's the rest of the picture. That's the rest of the story. That, yeah, there's a soul. It's transmigrating from one body to another. But we're all part and parcel of Krishna. We're all Krishna's spiritual offspring. We're all part of Krishna's spiritual family. We're all connected. You see? What are we doing here? Well, 15th chapter, Krishna says, Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manakstastani indriyani pakriti stani kashni. We're struggling hard with the six senses, which include the mind. That's what we're doing here. We're here trying to enjoy, and we're struggling hard with the six senses, including the mind. So, but anyway, it's really interesting. I find that, you know, Krishna consciousness is just, it gives you the whole thing. Now, once again, you know, just that we can provide that kind of information doesn't mean it's true. But but we don't leave people hanging. We say, okay, yeah, I acknowledge that. Just that I'm telling you that. It's possibly that's the whole picture of reality. That's the whole story. That doesn't, you know, that in itself, my statement, my assertion that that's what it is, doesn't mean it's true. Like, it's different between a fact and a claim, okay? But we don't leave people hanging. We say to people, okay, you want to find out if it's true or not? Here's the process. Here's how you do it. You come here and you do this. You chant Hare Krishna. You follow the four regulative principles. You engage in devotional service, and in that sense, Krishna consciousness is scientific. You make the experiment on yourself. You're the laboratory. You come here and you seriously engage in the process. You know, apply the philosophy, engage in the process, and then if you do that, if you do it seriously and sincerely, well, we're supposed to, you know, be able to start understanding that, yeah, it's all true. It's all true. You know, that's what Krishna says. This is the real picture. This is the absolute truth. So, I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Okay. Kuntra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.